And welcome into the Talking Calcio podcast with Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game and The Game Nashville Sports Network. Nashville SC end up beating Philadelphia Union for the first time up in Philadelphia. 3-1, a crazy game. Alongside me in this podcast is Claudio Villalobos with Nashville Total Sports. Claudio, your thoughts about the game?
Well, I mean, Nick, unexpected. We got to be honest. I mean, we seem to think that Nashville is coming along slowly but surely. But thinking about before the game that they were going to go into Philadelphia and beat the Union 3-1, I don't think the most optimistic of all of our fans would probably say they were right.
Oh, no, I agree. And that's the thing about Nashville is that they have now kind of changed their identity through this game. That's the thing about it is they have changed everything about their season. Now that you've beaten a team like the Philadelphia Union. And for me personally, when you go up against a team like the Philadelphia Union, and we talked about this after the game against New England Revolution when they tied at home, it was what, 0-0, right?
Correct.
And so like when you tie 0-0 to a team that's near the bottom of the table and you now, you know, change your demeanor and practice and so forth and go up in this game, and guess what you do? You end up winning on the road for the first time ever in Philadelphia. If you can beat teams that were high, like in the top, I'd say 8, you know, for the playoff rankings, and you go into it this year and beat those teams, that goes to show you that there is promise, especially in Nashville, for this club.
I mean, I agree with you. And one of the things that we've talked about it, about this team, not only now, but through the history, you know how many times they go into a game against one of the best teams in the league, like today, and not only play well, but beat them. And then they come back home and they have an awful game against a lower city team, even lost games. Like I was telling you off microphone that one time last season when we went to Cincinnati and they were flying and we beat Cincinnati at home, and you know, it was a pretty good game. And then they came back here the next game and lost to New England, the last position in the East Conference. So I mean, I think what I'm trying to go here, Nick, is that hopefully Nashville find some consistency in the game so that we don't have those up and downs every single weekend.
You're right, Claudio. Nashville has an issue just responding after a really good performance. They end up maybe putting out a dud of a 1-1 draw or a 1-0 loss, something like that. That they've just been known in history's past to do stuff like that. And under BJ Callahan, we've seen a little bit of that for the most part. I mean, I think it was more the fact of the depth wasn't fully there at the start of the season, and you know, just trying to get as much buildup underneath BJ, just get everybody, you know, familiar with his system, especially in league play. And, you know, going more into just having BJ as the head coach here after a 3-1 win against Philadelphia. And we kind of saw it again today. BJ's system is starting to finally, everybody's starting to get their feet under them, pun intended, when it comes to having the ball at their feet. They're not, you know, looking for certain passes or they're not being, they're more aggressive. They're confident with the ball at their feet. They're not, you know, under Gary, we all saw last year that, you know, if the pass isn't there, they're just going to pass it back to the back line. And then the back line's going to boot it a long ball down the field and hopefully, you know, Jacob Schaffelberg or Alex Mills down there to, you know, receive the pass and maybe make something out of that. It was just a one-trick pony. Under BJ, there's different avenues to where they can build up the play and maybe create more chances, and we're seeing that.
Well, BJ has told us several times already, Nick, in press conferences and so forth, that he's got his principles that his team has to follow and respect. But one thing I like about his system is that it's flexible enough to figure out that sometimes something is not working the way they maybe plan it during the week, then they can switch. And that seems to me mostly what happened today. I mean, they was obvious that the win was a big factor in the game, and the team find a way to start playing direct, which is not really what he prefers. But then, I mean, the conditions of the field, the conditions of the game were so that the team needed to make that switch. You know, when you talk about this team and the stuff that's happening under BJ, one of the things I'm not sure about this, but I'll get to you on this one and hope and get your opinion. You know, we used to be so dependable on whatever Honey Mustard will do up front, and not anymore. I mean, Sam Surridge is really, one of the best in the game today. But not only because of the fact that what he did, but only because of the fact that he's taking so much pressure away from Mokhtar that actually makes him look better, both of them. And then now we have Ahmed Kassam there making the third one on the front line, and it shows big time now.
Yeah, it really does. And you make a great point about Hani Mukhtar being more available and not having the ball at his feet. You know, under Gary, Nashville was revolved solely around Hani Mukhtar. The ball had to go through Hani to make some offensive chance. Now with this BJ Callahan system, like you're alluding to, you could have Hani there almost as a decoy. And it's great under BJ Callahan's system because he's able to go into those little pockets of space to be available for other players. And like Eddie Tagseth and Patrick Yazbek, both in those midfield roles, help out so much for Hani Mukhtar because they're able to open up those little pockets of space where Hani can receive the pass and or to Sam Surridge. Sam Surridge had a goal against Philadelphia 3-1 up in Philly. So, I mean, you mentioned Ahmed Kassam, Sam Surridge, Hani Mukhtar. All three of those guys had a goal against Philadelphia, which is great to see. You know, there was obviously the penalty woes that Nashville's had in games past last year and into this year a little bit. Hani Mukhtar hasn't really looked himself. There's been some signs of regression and some aspects of his game, but the game against Philadelphia, I believe he just, I guess, hushed the haters in a roundabout way because he was able to convert a penalty, and a nice penalty at that, Claudio. A Penica kick. I mean, come on.
I mean, I don't think we saw him. Well, you were not able to be there, but we saw him, Hani, probably upset at the fact that he did that with the penalty kick on the previous game. He was practicing for a little while there. Where I even had the video in my phone because I filmed it when he was taking penalty kicks by himself there for a little while. But I never saw one that he might have taken there like tonight. I mean, it was like that Panenka style thing. I don't know. I mean, coaches are always, you know, they go crazy when a guy tries to do that because of the history of the style of penalty. But he did it today, and people were upsetting him in Philly because of that, and you know, they feel humiliated by the fact that he tried to do that, he scored. But that's Hani. Hani will do stuff like that. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised. I guess BJ is not either. I was going to ask him that question, but I couldn't today about what he felt after the penalty from Hani was taken. But one of the other things, it doesn't hurt at all, Nico and people who are listening to us, when you have a guy like Eddie. Elite Tagseth, who is the third player in the whole league doing the most running during the game. It doesn't hurt at all, does it?
No, not at all. I mean, I think you've tagged him as the termite, the guy that just takes up all the space.
He's everywhere, isn't he?
Yeah, he's everywhere. He's the atomic termite.
He seems like he multiplies.
Yeah, he does multiply. He's everywhere. Like, that's the good thing about another thing of having really good midfielders that can take up space, that can close down the space when the other team has the ball, because then that takes away all their opportunities, and that's just perfect. And I think, you know, we talked about this in preseason off the air, and BJ's system is, he broke it down to the bare bones. Even though these guys are true professionals, he said it, they break this game down into phases. They have to complete phase one to phase two to phase three to build up. And we've kind of mentioned that already into the podcast. But when you build up, you're able to complete a lot more stuff into a system that can become more complex as the season progresses. And I believe that's the ultimate goal right now, is that this team obviously wants to win trophies, but you have to complete the phases to build up to that, obviously.
Well, Nick, I don't know. I mean, this is just my take about the last two games. But I noticed, I think, a little bit of a different approach today. I was just talking on the press conference the other day, and I was asking VJ about the fact that the high pressure that Nashville put on most teams, especially what they did to Portland here, really got those guys confused. They could never build anything from the back. The ball possession was just not there for them, and that's why Nashville pretty much dominated the whole game. Now, tonight, I thought I saw something different. I'm going to get your take on this. Where the pressure, even though it was just there, is part of VJ's principles. It was a little bit higher, not higher, but actually backward on the field. I mean, it seems like Nashville allowed them to kind of have possession in the first quarter of their own field. But then right after that, the pressure started build up, and that thing that got him confused. So I thought I saw something that I never noticed before, where Nashville can get teams very confused in terms of what they're expecting before the game begins and when it actually happens as soon as the game starts.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see that throughout the rest of the season, because something about the system that they run, I've seen this with the teams that are really good. They're allowing them to get more and more possession and more into their side of the field. And it just goes to show you the veteran leadership and the confidence that this team has when the ball is on their side of the field. Because then, I mean, that's kind of what BJ's system is. That 4-2-2-2, it is open to more counterattacks. And we saw a lot of that today with, you know, Nashville, and that they're even out of the midfield. They found those little gaps of space in the midfield where it was open. And we saw Ahmed Kasem, we saw Sam Surridge, both have open opportunities on net, and they ended up capitalizing on both of those. So I think we're going to see more of the, I guess, I wouldn't call it the Gary Smith way of, like, you know, parking the bus and allowing teams to come into your side of the field. But yet I think there is a strategic aspect of it that a lot of people don't really see in the naked eye. And you're going to, I guess, the more and more you watch this team, the more and more you're going to realize it as it goes on.
I agree. I completely agree with that. I mean, and you know, one of the things that has changed a little bit is also the way that even the two guys in the back, which is in this case Zimmerman and Mayer, are need to approach the sides a little bit longer. I mean, it used to be that they were standing right there on the back and that was about it. But now we have seen Zimmerman, and we see Mayer sometimes have to come up a little longer. Like he said on the press conference, you know, he likes the fact that the team starts the pressure higher from way higher from the goal, you know, to make sure that the teams don't get as many chances or many opportunities in their goal. It was difficult today because Philadelphia is a very good team, but still you can see hints of it. I mean, that really relieves pressure from both of those guys. And then one thing that is a big difference, and we know we've talked about it, that Nick, is the fact that now Nashville tries to come out with the ball on their feet and stay away from the long ball, even though today the conditions allow him to do that. But that's a big difference. Even Joe has become a long way. You know, he used to be the kind of, like, he showed like he was scared of playing that the short ball, the passing the ball back and forth there. Not anymore. Joe was a big guy, a big difference. Even at this age, he's learned, he's come a long way.
And you make a great point about Joe Willis actually providing substance to this team when they're in possession. We saw it today. I mean, even when Walker Zimmerman, throughout this early part of the season, who did a really good job, by the way, against Philadelphia, the point of, my numbers are correct looking at it, he had 22 clearances out of Nashville's side of the field, which is what BJ wants him to do. He wants him to defend. He doesn't want him to be a midfielder. I mean, don't get me wrong. You want all your guys to be technically sound with the ball at their feet, but at the same time, when you incorporate a guy like Joe Willis, who in years past has kind of been the just stick inside the goalie box. That's all you want out of Joe Willis. Now he's kind of evolving into that goalie that, you know, you see it in the Pep Guardiola system and a lot of the PSGs and the European style systems where you're incorporating your goalie as a fifth defender in a roundabout way, or somebody that can actually contribute to the passing game and contribute to certain avenues. Like, say, if you see a nice passing lane up the middle of the field, you can now add that to the mix. And that's something that Nashville hasn't seen in years past, and something that we're going to continue to see this year as long as Joe Willis stays healthy.
And kudos to Joe, because, I mean, you could have thought about him when before the season started, maybe this would be his last one. That's not his mind. He wants to keep playing. He said it very clearly the first time we interviewed him. I think you and I did it together. But he said, no, I'm gonna keep playing. I enjoy playing. I'm gonna play until I don't do it, and I want to see my kids growing up still see, you know, he's got his father playing. And then he comes to this and he makes changes to his game, which, to be honest with you, Nick, I wasn't expecting. I wasn't expecting them, but I wasn't expecting him to be able to do it. He's shown me how wrong I was, and I'm happy to be wrong in this case.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned about Joe Willis and in the preseason when we got to speak with him. The one thing I asked him was, do you have any personal accolades? And what did he tell us? No, not at all. I just want to win championships. Yeah. He wants to win. And there's something to that, Claudio. There's something to not only him, but to players that are in contract years. To me, as a kid growing up, I've always looked at players, when they're in their contract year, they always have one of the best career years. And that's obviously because they want another contract. But I'm not saying that's primarily Joe Willis's, you know, number one goal is to have another contract with Nashville and or to keep playing. Obviously, he wants to keep playing, but there's just something to a player in a contract year. You're going to get more out of him than you will a guy that's on a deal like Hany Mukhtar. And I'm not calling Hany Mukhtar out at all. I'm just saying, in general, when you have a guy that's on a longer-term deal and that's more comfortable financially, I'm not saying that they don't lose their urge to play the game. It's just there's a switch. You know what I mean? There's a switch that kind of clicks with a player when you have, you know, a contract on the latter years or a contract that's just starting for a long duration of time.
Yeah, it seems like it does push him a little harder.
Yeah.
For sure. I know where you're going, and fully agree with you. I mean, if I'm the one that I know my contract's up this year, well, I probably want to have try to get the best game of my life this season, so I guess I can actually renew and stay here a little longer. I know what you're talking about. And that seems to be the case for Joe. Maybe he saw what was coming with these young guys who are very good keepers, both of them, Valdez and... what's his name? The second goalkeeper now.
And Brian Schweik.
Brian Schweik. No. Obviously they're younger. Obviously they might have shown to be better with their feet before the season started. But Joe wasn't up to giving up his place at all. He wasn't. He didn't. He hasn't. And I think he won. So that's one thing that starts from there, you know. And then you go to a guy like Andy Nahar seems like he's been here forever. I don't know about you, but it seems to me like he's been there forever. He seems like he's one of the oldest guy in this team, and it's easy to forget that he's just starting this season with the team. I mean, he's playing like I'm one of the guys, the oldest guys in this place. You know, I'm a leader also. He does everything with confidence. Everything rarely. He does something wrong that you could say, whoops, he's having a bad day. He probably will someday. He hasn't so far.
No, he hasn't. He's actually brought the best word I can use right now is Joe Fuel. He brings a Joe Fuel look to Nashville's defending side of the ball, because he's obviously he's an attacking style defender at right back. But, you know, he mentioned in the preseason that Danny Alves is one of the guys he looked up to when he was a kid. And he kind of emulates that a little bit. He gets into that attacking half, and then under Callahan's system, he's able to kind of get into the offensive move. And we saw it in the last home game. He was able to go down the right side of the flank and then go cut in on the right side of the box and just tuck it away back post. And it was a tight angle, but it just goes to show you that speed that he has, that just that top end speed, it breaks away from everything else. Because Nashville's midfield with Eddie Tag, Sefton, Patrick Yazbek, when they sense that he's going up into the attack, they drop back into that four in the back, and or that back line keeps gradually pushing up into the attacking third, and then you have Walker and Jack that stay back at midfield, but you're having your Patrick Yazbek fill in as that right back holding spot until Andy gets back into his position to get back into shape. And I think it's just this team's chemistry, you're starting to see it on the field, and that's something that Nashville fans are, like I said, it's only going to take within time, but it's something that's fun to watch, especially with Andy in the mix now. All these new guys that are starting to come into play, I feel like the chemistry and that switch is starting to click for them.
I agree. You know, and you mentioned the third guy that maybe I wanted to talk about, because I'm the one that I always say, well, you know, a lot of times people, coaches, everyone makes excuses about for players. Excuses that maybe they're not even trying to make themselves, but people make it for them. And then you say, well, this guy needs to acclimatize. He's got a language barrier, this and this and this and that. You know, and I never agreed with that. I mean, a guy is good everywhere, you know, and it shouldn't take him that long to show what he's got. And, you know, when you can see guys like Andy Nahar and Eddie show up like they've done for this team right away, then that brings down that opinion about giving guy weeks or even months to adapt to a city, to a team, to a style of play. And they say, well, hold on, these two guys are doing it. Why are we waiting for these other players to actually catch up? And it's not the same case, but I think I've talked to you before about Jasbek. And I thought Jasbek can do a lot more like he did today, though. Today, he really had a good game, in my opinion. Well, this is the type of Yazbek we need.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Nashville has to have a guy like Yazbek every week.
Every week. Not just show up one day or have a game or 15 minutes or 20 minutes. He needs to have a guy like this next to Eddie doing what they did today together. This made a big difference today for the team.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see what BJ thinks with having the same mix of Brian Acosta, the other Honduran midfielder. I'm curious to see where he fits into the mix of this equation because, you know, when your team's having really good chemistry and building up to things, you don't want to mess up that feng shui. You don't want to mess it up at all. And I want to get back to another point you made just a bit ago about, you know, having guys like Andy Nahar and Eddie Tagseth who are here on, like, I guess, short amount of time to develop chemistry with one another. How about Ahmed Kasım, the guy out of the Swedish Premier League, another Swedish player that, or another Swedish Premier League player, that is, talking about Yazbek and Tagseth, who has made a quick transition to the MLS and has produced immediately just about two starts, two goals. I mean, this guy he's as advertised.
Well, that's exactly my point. I mean, if you see three guys in the team doing that kind of stuff, then I don't see how I can actually easily make excuses for others not to show up and try to do look better every single game. I understand the fact that it takes a little longer for one player when you compare to another. That's fine. But, you know, those cases that we had before, I'm not going to say names, where players took forever to actually show up what they need, what the team expected, I don't think that's something that anything can afford anymore, especially not in the MLS where the competition is so high. At this point, a guy that you bring has to produce, I mean, if not right away, very soon. Otherwise, you know, you got to start listening to the fans. You got to start having issues inside the locker room, I guess. So, I mean, these three guys, Ahmed, Eddie, and Andy, have set the bar high, for sure.
Yeah, they really have set the bar high. And I want to talk a little bit more about Ahmed Kasım, because Ahmed Kasım, he brings a flair to his game that we haven't seen in Nashville, I don't think, in my opinion. Besides the early stages of Hani Mukhtar, I don't think we've seen a flair like Ahmed Kasım when it comes to stylistically on the field, because he's able to see the whole field. Like, if he's able to play out the right wing or the left wing or in the midfield in that attacking role. Honestly, if Hani's ever out at any time this year and Ahmed Kasım's available, I think he fills in for Hani in that 10 role.
I agree. And maybe, I'm not sure about saying here, he can only get better. I think he's much better even than we've seen so far. It's only three games. I think it's going to be a lot better than we've seen already. So, I mean, we're talking about a guy that could actually be, the way he's coming along right now with the team, one of the best acquisitions in this league this year for anything.
You know, when he came to, you know, Nashville, and after he scored his first goal the other day at home, he went into the press conference and he ended up saying, you know, I thought MLS would be a really good thing for my career. And you know what? We can listen to the audio from that press conference. Here was Ahmed Kasım after he scored his first goal with Nashville.
It's a good league for us offensive players. It's a really like fast football both ways. So I like the way MLS playing.
There's Ahmed Kasım. Ahmed Kasım, obviously a big addition for Nashville so far. Scores again against Philadelphia in his second match that he started. I mean, a guy like this is what Nashville needs. And if he ends up producing more and more, I'm intrigued to see what BJ does when it comes to those two attacking winger-esque roles in that 4-2-2. Because do you ever have a lineup where you have Ahmed Kasım and Jacob Schaffelberg out there at the same time?
Well, I like to see it, but so far it seems like they're playing in the same position, aren't they? You know, because even today when Schaffelberg came in, that's because Kasım went out. I'm not sure if we're going to see that unless he sends Schaffelberg to play on the other side. Then I don't think we're going to see him together very often at all.
With that being said, Claudio, I want to get your opinions on Nashville and their upcoming matchup. What do you think about this next matchup going for Nashville?
Well, like I said, I'm only thinking about the fact that the story I was telling you, but I'm expecting to see a team that is full of confidence. And I'm talking about Nashville in this case. We have to maybe talk about the rival a little later. But I think after winning in Philadelphia, against a team that has never hasn't been scored against at all, 3 wins in the season, then you can only expect to see an even better Nashville in the next game, wouldn't you?
I think so. I mean, going up against Montreal at Geodis Park on Saturday, I believe that is. That's a 7:30 late kickoff. A lot of these late kickoffs, I don't know if I'm a fan of it or not. It's around my bedtime. But anyways, you know, I don't know if Nashville will be...
7:30 bedtime?
Hey, come on, man. It happens.
You're a young guy, bro.
I know, but I like to get my sleep. Like, get well rested, you know? But as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, Claudio, these teams that Nashville goes up against, like a Montreal or a New England Revolution, teams that were near the bottom of the table last year or middle of the pack, they have to capitalize on these opportunities, especially at home.
They do. I mean, that's exactly what I fully agree with you. I mean, it defeats the purpose if you go all the way to Philadelphia and do what they did today and then come back home and lose ground with one of these teams. Not that they're not going to be difficult. They are. I mean, it's the MLS. But still, you're a Geodis. You come back from a big victory. You gotta make your point against anybody who visits. In this case, it's going to be Montreal, but they're going to have to feel that Nashville is a better team. I believe they are.
And it's going to be an interesting matchup for sure. But I'm also wanting to know if Nashville is going to switch up the lineup at all. Because when you go up against a team like Montreal, who's 0-3-1 to start the season, you got to wonder if, you know, Nashville's top A team, if you're going to have one or two guys out and maybe put in a guy like Brugman or another guy like, I don't know, maybe start Schaffelberg and get him some fresh legs. I don't know. I feel like this might be one of those games where you can kind of switch up the lineup a little bit just to get some other guys some more reps to get your A team a little rest because it's a long season.
It is. I mean, I'm one that, especially you mentioned Brugman. I want to see Brugman starting a game. I mean, it seems like he's dying to do it. And I'm not sure who's gonna couple. Well, Eddie is gonna be hard to take him out of there. What would you do? I mean, if you're gonna start Brugman, who's the one that you will keep out? Jasper?
No.
No,
I think it is difficult for sure. I mean, Nashville is starting to hit a real stride with Yazbek and Tagseth in the midfield there. But
Brooklyn is not a one guy that you could put in the side. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He's not a win. He's got to be in with those two guys. I guess you're going to have to use the three of them together. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't know. But I know Brooklyn plays where they play, both of them.
Yeah, and I don't know how many more minutes you're going to see out of Gaston Brugman right now because, you know, he's coming back from his injury he had. I believe it was with the knee. That might be something to watch out for. I don't know. I'm still a little hesitant on Gaston Brugman to be starting, but that is something to keep an eye out for because that's somebody that needs to be contributing a little bit more, whether that's, you know, coming off the bench or whatever it may be. But, you know, the substitutions BJ's made recently, they've been later. You know, in years past, you and I look at each other, we'll glance and laugh. Oh, it's the 65th minute. You know who's coming in? Teal Bunbury. Now it's a little different. Now you actually have to strategize. Like, I don't know. Maybe we're going to see somebody else come in. Like, it's just all different. And I kind of like it. It's a breath of fresh air.
I do too. But at the same time, I'm thinking, what happens if any of these guys get injured? I mean, I like the fact that he's starting the same 11 most times. But what's going to happen if one of them get injured? If you're only giving other guys 3, 5, 10 minutes at the most. I mean, you know,
yeah,
that could really break the whole thing. I don't know. I mean, he's going to have to make a decision at one point to rest somebody, not just because maybe the guy needs to rest, it's just because he needs to give more minutes to other people that he might need. This is a long season. This is a very long season. So that's the part I'm kind of hesitating about. Thinking about and the way that what is he gonna do? Is he gonna keep doing this, or is he actually gonna say, "Hey, I need to get this some minutes to these other guys for sure"? I'm not too more worried about what Schaffelberg can do because we already know. Talking about other parts of the equation than having had enough minutes yet.
Right, and you know the first game with the New England Revolution, we saw that depth with Matt Corcoran and Wyatt Meyer. Wyatt Meyer left off the starting. List today, not starting 11, but just the full roster list in general for the match day against Philadelphia. So I'm intrigued to see if BJ decides to put either of those guys back in the equation in the midfield to start them with just to give that extra rest because he alluded to it. He said it after the first game that these guys, they've proved their worth on this roster.
Oh, yeah. Now, and this is just, I guess we can do a lot of things here, trying to set up teams for Nashville going forward. Whenever you have Jaspik and Eddie together, who are you going to pair them with? I mean, are you going to do Corcoran and Eddie, for instance? Are you going to do Corcoran and Brugman? How is that going to play?
For me, it would be Jaspik and Corcoran, or Jaspik and Meyer. If anything, it would be to vice versa, to keep Jaspik out as like a different switch. It would be Wyatt Meyer and Eddie Tagseth, and then obviously Meyer and Corcoran. That's how I would pair those rotations if it were me.
I mean, I think I'm more at the opposite, because I like Meyer's work rate.
Yes.
It's very similar to Eddie. Very similar to Eddie. So I believe his work rate paired with Jaspik will make a big show. Whereas on the other side, you're going to need Eddie playing one of the, I mean, I don't know, Corcoran perhaps, maybe Brugman.
Maybe.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
The work rate in the middle, as far as I've seen so far, are Eddie, high work rate, maybe the highest in the whole league, and not Corcoran, but what's his name?
Wyatt Meyer.
Yes, Wyatt Meyer, correct.
I mean, it's an important piece to talk about, Claudio, because after Eddie Tagseth and Patrick Jaspik, I'm just saying in general, if they're not on the field together, you got to find out what the depth is with this team. And sure, there have been some nice spurts, and there's been some nice little points where you have Matt Corcoran and Wyatt Meyer filling in. They've been good. Then you've had, you know, that game against Lexington where it was preseason. It was a home game, closed doors. We got to see a little bit of Brian Acosta. He was pretty decent, but that's the thing. When you have guys like Gaston Brugman and Brian Acosta, those are more of the older veteran guys that you're going to need to come off the bench and or put in some quality minutes. And obviously both those guys are dealing that. Well, let's put it this way. Gaston Brugman, he came back from injury. He's starting to get more and more minutes under his belt. You got another guy in Brian Acosta who is still injured, and he'll be, you know, in the mix eventually in the season. But when you have two guys that are a little bit injury riddled, it's going to be kind of difficult to get them back in the mix. It really is. And we're kind of seeing that right now with Gaston Brugman. It's not been difficult, from my opinion, but it's definitely going to be a process for him. It's good for him, though, to get some minutes now while Nashville is kind of getting a good chemistry feel. Because when this team's not having good chemistry, when they're not getting winning results, and you start, you know, putting in a Gaston Brugman, and then you start putting in a Brian Acosta and tinkering with the lineup too much, that's when things start getting a little dicey. And I think that's what happened last year with Nashville. The roster and the starting 11 got a little bit too much, you know, put this there, put that there. It was like too much sprinkles on this donut, not a lot of sprinkles on this cake. Like, it was all over the place.
But I remember we talked about it. There's a lot out there. Well, it was an awful year for sure. But we did discuss this many times there in the press box with us two and the other guys from the media, and we thought about, you know, when we compared Nashville with the other teams in the league, you know, when things are not going right inside the pitch, and then the coach looks next to him to right or left, whatever the bench is, and he said, well, I do have some options here to try to change things. Well, we agreed many times that wasn't the case for Nashville. I mean, when the coach was there, Gary or BJ at the end, and looked up to his side, he didn't have much answers, many answers to change things. It seems like he does now. I mean, BJ has him now. When they're back all from injury, when they're in shape, right. I believe this team is much better. It's deeper now, and the coach has many more options to get his hands on. Yeah, but it wasn't the case. Now, my thing is that unless we get Brian Acosta very soon and we get Brugman up to speed, then we're in the same issue. We're in the same handicap. I mean, what if these one of those guys really come down on injury, or they need to rest because they really will need it pretty soon? What's going to happen? I mean, was it enough what we saw from Corcoran and Wyatt that we can say, well, they're gonna fit the system right away as soon as they come in? Or was it just a one game thing like we saw?
We want to hear your thoughts on Nashville SC this season in comparison to the previous season. So if you want to do that, you can reach out to my Twitter at NickFrazier23. That's NickFrazier23. You can DM me and we can get to those questions there. Or you can reach out to Claudio. Claudio, you can put out your Twitter handles now and we can get to
that. Yeah, sure. Our Twitter is Nash Total Sports. That's it. Easy as that. Nash Total Sports. Just send us a note there, talk to us, and let us know what you think. Let us know we were crazy. Let us know we're wrong. It doesn't matter. You wouldn't have to be right all the time, and maybe you know more than we do, which is okay. We want to know about that, too. So just let us know what your thoughts are about the team and the things that we are going this season for Nashville SC.
Yeah. So with that being said, Claudio, what are your, I guess, last thoughts on this Nashville SC versus Montreal? What are your score predictions and who scores the goals?
I'm not going to say that they're going to come back and say score 3 or 4 against any team, but I think they should be able to handle victory, perhaps 2-1. And I'd like to see, I think Sam would score another one. Sam Sorich would score, and the other one would be finally Hanis.
Honey, again, okay. Yeah, I'm going to go with Nashville winning, and this time I'm going to go with a clean sheet. I should have predicted a clean sheet last home game. I think they're going to get back-to-back clean sheets for home games. I'm going to go with Nashville winning. I'm going to go 3-0. 3-0, and I'm going to go goal scorers to be... I'm going to go Ahmed Kassem. I'm going to go Ahmed Kassem again. I think he's going to get three... I'm going to go 3 starts and 3 goals. If he does start, I think it'll be 3 starts and 3 goals. Well, this is tough. I want to just have a oddball one out there just to keep in the back pocket, but I'm going to go Ahmed Kassem, Hani Mukhtar, and Eddie Tagseth. I think Eddie Tagseth gets on the score sheet.
I like Eddie on the score sheet. I like that. I mean,
he covers all the grounds. The only thing he hasn't covered yet is the ball in the back of the net.
You know what I would also like? I like to be wrong, and they have Zimmerman scoring his third header.
That's not a bad shout.
That'd be nice. And one of the things I like is when I put the other team scoring against Nashville. One of the things that I enjoy the most is when Joe Willis makes me be wrong. he keeps a clean sheet. I love that.
I think it was 2 seasons ago where he was in a neck and neck battle for clean sheets with Seattle's goalkeeper at the time. Yes. I want to see that Joe Willis again, or just that performance from the defense. I mean, obviously BJ Callahan's system requires a lot of press once you lose the ball, but I really want to see Nashville kind of control the game more and more. Like obviously they've controlled the game for the most part throughout the season so far, but I want to see them really dominate a game. And I think this Montreal game is something you're going to see, because don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to knock Montreal down while they're down, but it just they're not the best of teams right now. They're just not.
They shouldn't be the team that puts Nashville in victory in jeopardy. That's for sure.
Yeah. And Nashville, they always, after, like we talked about to start the podcast, they always struggle against teams that are at the bottom of the table. So hopefully this BJ Callahan system can kind of get them on their right feet there. But with that being said, thank you all for listening to the Talking College Show podcast. We'll catch you on the next episode. This is Nick Frazier signing off on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.